Episode 7, 12 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Welcome to the Retirement Resource, the one place committed to providing the information, resources, and tools you need to navigate the often complex world of retirement planning with confidence and clarity. We're going to discuss both the financial and non-financial aspects of a successful retirement, and we're going to have fun. Today on the Retirement Resource, we're going to flip the script just a little bit, and a good friend of the Retirement Resource show, financial advisor and host of the Better Money Decisions podcast, Kate Stalter, is going to be interviewing me about these steps to a successful retirement. So let's jump right in.
All right, everybody. I am so thrilled today. My guest on the show is Bo Henderson. He is a pioneer in the retirement coaching movement, and he'll tell you a little more about what that means. And I've known Bo for several years now. We actually met, and I kind of laugh about this. This is back a few years ago when I was doing a daily little podcast for a company called MoneyShow.com. And they're very much still around. They have a lot of great content on their site. And because I had to interview a financial advisor or a money manager or somebody in the industry every single day, I was always out there kind of scouring the internet, trying to find interesting people to talk to. And Bo, somehow, I don't even remember the details, but somehow I came across one of your articles and I reached out and we did some interviews. And, you know, we've kind of gone back and forth ever since then, talking to each other on each other's shows and really kind of comparing notes about the industry. So it's so great to have you on the Better Money Decisions show today.
Well, you know, it's funny, Kate, how that happens. I can't pinpoint the exact initial reason or how we met, but it was the impetus for our friendship that we've stayed in touch for years now and continue to talk about some of these fun concepts around money.
Oh, absolutely. And you and I share really many, if not all, of the same points of view about retirement, about money. So it's always great to talk to you. Now, let's just dive in here. I want to just ask you, you know, you've, for many years, you've kind of had the brand of the rich life. And I love that. What do you mean by that? Because it's more than just net worth. It's more than money in the bank, isn't it?
So the rich life, you know, it's a brand. It's the branding of the coaching. It's the branding of the financial planning firm. I've written a couple books on the topic, but it's really a philosophy and a life mission for me. And what I mean by the rich life, it's pretty simple, really, when you break it down. A rich life is, yes, money is a component that we all have to deal with to be successful in some kind of context of just living life. But let's do that in the context of a life that we've gotten really clear on. It's actually exciting to us. It actually lights us up. And then let money be the tool that helps us accomplish that, as opposed to being an ends to a mean or the destination, so to speak. If I only have this much money, I'm successful. I can tell you, and Kate, I know you've seen this too, a lot of people get to that point where they have the money they thought would make them happy, and it just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And I think one nice thing is about, I think, the younger boomers, the Gen Xers, I mean, certainly the millennials, but I think it's an older demographic than that too. I think people in America, many have realized that, hey, this striving for more money, that's not necessarily what it's about. It's about, what does it mean for my life, for my family, for my hopes and dreams? Not so much like, hey, am I going to buy a football team today? But more like, hey, can I live the life that I envision? Is that pretty much what you see it as well?
That's it. You know, and I always clarify, hey, everybody listening, I hope you make $100 million, but I hope you're living a life that's meaningful and fulfilling to you, right? You don't have to choose. It's not either or. I think a rich life can be both and, if that's the thing that's really fulfilling to you.
Very true. And from the flip side, I think that old sort of saying about money can't buy happiness, it's very easy to turn that into a cop-out, because in this day and age, people are living longer. You do need to plan ahead, figure out how are you going to cover your expenses over the course of your lifetime. You know, something you said there reminded me of a quote I read years ago, and I believe it was from Cindy Crawford, of all people, but they were asking her about kind of what does it mean to have money. And she said, she gave an example of her refrigerator breaking down. And she said, having money just means that I can call up, order a new refrigerator, and they deliver it that day. So money turns what could have been a crisis into an inconvenience. And I was like, wow, that says a lot right there, I think.
That's a great way to put it, is you know, living a life of every little unexpected event, which, you know, we're dealing with humans in life, which they're going to happen. They're going to happen frequently. The difference between that, I love that, between the inconvenience and the emergency, that's huge.
It really is. It really is because, you know, I live in New Mexico, which is a pretty poor state. And I see this all the time with folks who, if the car breaks down, it just becomes an absolute life crisis. And that's a shame. That's a shame. And I think, again, kind of the point of longevity, that's a very big problem, is that people not having enough to pay their expenses when they're 85, 90, 95 even. I mean, more and more people are living to 100. And, you know, I'm sure you run into this too. You run into people that say, well, you know, my dad died at 65. It's like, well, that doesn't mean you're going to, you know?
No, you're right. The longevity is a big issue, and we can dig into that a little deeper, but it's the risk of risk that multiplies all risks, because if you live longer, all your other risks go up. So longevity is something we really have. You know, I was recently, Kate, giving a workshop on Social Security for some local clients. I was helping them optimize their claiming strategy. And one of the things that came up, I remember when I was doing some research, was we took back to when Social Security started, right? And we looked, and the average life expectancy then was 60. So you see how this worked. People claimed at 65, but they died at 60. It was a brilliant system, right? And now we have people living until, I think, I don't want to mess up the statistics, but there's a very high chance of living into your 80s, and then a 25% chance of living to your 90s for both sexes anymore. So longevity is something we really do have to pay attention to. But you know, you're talking about the emergencies and going back. Sometimes it's just going back to basic blocking and tackling. It's that deal where if we have an emergency fund in place, we're not playing the game to where when that refrigerator goes out and we're so tight, we're putting it on a credit card, and then as soon as we get ahead, we're paying off the credit card. And then as soon as we make some progress with that, the next emergency happens. And it becomes a cycle. And you're right, it can be the difference in just some really basics. And a lot of times when we talk about this money game and the finances, it really is just a few basics to get right and maybe pulling away some of the emotion and bad beliefs we have about money to really be successful.
Well, that is a very nice segue into something I wanted to talk to you about people's emotions, their beliefs, the whole planning process. You have a new book out, don't you, called 12 Steps to Retirement Success. Tell me a little bit about that. That sounds pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so the 12 Steps to Retirement Success, I found this was needed because I was getting so many calls and questions, and I'm sure you've heard the exact same thing about, hey, what's the best investment? What mutual fund should I get in? Bo, my neighbor invested in this and it did great. I want to do that. And I saw people focusing on the wrong things. And what the 12 Steps to Retirement Success really is about is really about creating an integrated strategy. Right. So that if we have a strategy, if we have the right strategy, we're going to be in good shape. What I find, Kate, is most people don't control all the things they can control because they're so worried about things outside of our control, such as what's the government going to do, what's happening with taxes, what's happening with the market, that they never really build the strategy that's right for them in the first place. And what I found is if we can focus on the right strategy and we can focus on the right behaviors, we do better than the majority of our peers.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. So let's jump in then. What are some of the things that people should actually be doing? Because it's hard to wrap your brain around some of this. And aren't there people, Bo, who don't want to do any planning? It's almost like you don't want to go to the doctor because you don't want bad news.
It's almost a fear. I call it an ostrich with your head in the sand technique. It's I'm not going to think about it, and I just hope everything works out all right. And that's actually your financial plan or your financial strategy, and that's not a great strategy. And the one thing I always share or tell, and it happens every single time, is that if you'll do just the little bit of work it takes to get clarity around, here's my real situation, the good, bad, the ugly. Here's where I'm really trying to go. And I've got, you get clear enough that you can create a plan to go there. Every single time, that clarity is the thing to alleviate the fear that keeps people from actually moving forward.
Mm-hmm. No, it really is. It's sort of, here's a step-by-step plan. So speaking of the steps, let's jump in there. What are some of these things that people should be looking at?
Well, we already hit on the first one, Kate. Step one is we've got to prepare as if we're going to live a long life.
Yep.
You know, longevity being the multiplier of all risk. If we plan like our parents plan, much less like our grandparents plan, the statistic is we're going to run out of money within 15 years. Wow. Now, why is that a problem? What if we live 30 years?
Yeah.
Most people don't live just on Social Security.
Oh, no. Okay, that's the first thing then, plan for longevity. And people are often shocked about that. And, you know, I used to hear more arguments against that than I do these days. I think people are kind of waking up to it a little bit more. What is the second step then that people should pay attention to?
We have to really be realistic about inflation and making sure we're building in pay raises throughout a retirement so that we're not caught with our pants down, so to speak, 10, 15, 20 years down the road with half the purchasing power and we haven't been increasing those assets. And the reason this one came up, Kate, is because I saw a lot of financial calculators out there or some tools or some spreadsheets, great tools maybe to get you in the ballpark, but if they're not accounting for the inflation properly, they're very misleading. And it could cause people to spin down too quick. And again, run through and then you realize, hey, at 75, I'm out of money, but I'm still really healthy and really active. That could be a problem. So building in, being realistic about inflation and building in, giving yourself pay raises.
And this is where a plan comes into play, isn't it? Because it's very easy to get an Excel spreadsheet and say, okay, I spend 50 grand a year. And if I do that for the next 15 years, I'll be fine. Okay, A, two problems with that. Like you said, you might live longer than 15 more years. And the other one you said is B, you got to factor in inflation. So this is a very, this can be a tough pill to swallow. But it is very necessary. Again, it's almost the same thing of going to the doctor and you might get some news you don't want to hear, but at least then you can begin your treatment plan, right?
Yeah. And what happens is if we don't get a realistic expectation of how to account for this inflation or the cost of living increases is we'll spend down too quickly. And again, it's the problem. And let's keep moving. Let's keep going through these, Kate, as many as you want to get to. The next one is really having an income plan. So it kind of fits with the first two. We got to account for our longevity. We got to build in inflation, but really being realistic about how much you can withdraw.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I think that's something that, you know, we've all read in the advisory world and the financial planning world. We're all aware of the 4% withdrawal rate and all these different formulas that have been calculated over the years. And I get asked about those sometimes. People will find something on the internet. But, you know, it's a lot more personalized than that, isn't it?
It's complicated. It's complex. You really need to really know the numbers and understand, because that 4% rule, when I started in the business, that was just accepted as gospel truth, so to speak, because it's what you heard. That's what you were taught. And I've seen scenarios to where, depending on the period of time you take into account, especially with the last two corrections we've had, where that 4% rule actually held up just over 50% of the time.
Okay.
So we got really clear and really, really pay attention to the specific strategy, the money we need, and how to allocate that properly so that we don't really draw down too fast. I mean, that becomes the bottom line there.
Again, a lot of it does come back to the longevity over and over again, isn't it? That's sort of, you're right. That's the key issue underlining so much of this.
Next one. And this is a big one. People are thinking about this. We get more questions about this. I had to bring somebody in-house that is just a healthcare expert because I had so many questions about this that I couldn't stay on top of that subject the way I needed to and do the other things I do. And it's make sure we're budgeting and preparing for healthcare expenses in retirement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's more and more of something that we're talking to people about, particularly long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prices, costs in the healthcare world are just going up. Not going to be coming down. Inflation is rampant in that particular industry. And, you know, people, this is one of these things people don't want to think about. What happens when you're 90, 95 years old and you're very ill and you need the care, how are you going to cover it? What's going to happen? You know, this whole idea of, oh, my daughter will take care of me. Really? Seriously? And honestly, most of the people I run into now, Bo, they don't want to be a burden on their children. So that whole idea of, oh, I'll just move in with my kids, I don't really hear that so much, which is a nice thing. I think that was something back in the old days. I think today's people want to be more self-sufficient. So what are some of the recommendations you might have for watching out for healthcare throughout one's life?
Well, the thing, the statistic, the most recent statistic I recall was that we need to, again, being realistic about retirement. So we have these certain assets, or I call them puzzle pieces, we have to work with. Realistically, knowing either by insurance, and you hit on long-term care, or other means, whether it's self-funding, the average couple uses about $265,000 over the course of retirement for healthcare.
Wow, that is crazy.
And you know, when we're creating an income plan, a lot of times that's not being pulled apart or addressed, and that could run into problems, because we've all seen scenarios where a loved one or somebody, or maybe it's happened to us, to where an unexpected event or illness has just thrown you out of the game, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that really does have to be addressed. It's kind of one of these things that's not an afterthought anymore. It has to be addressed right up front. So what's the next thing?
Let's keep going. So the next one, and this is going to be very relevant, especially this with recent events, it's let's get a suitable market strategy. Mm-hmm. And what I mean, this section, we're really starting to talk about market risk. And we're going back to kind of what we hit on in the very beginning of the call, Kate, is this idea of how do you not become a victim to market risk? It's if you have the proper strategy. And what I mean by that is, are we very clear that money that we're going to we need to access in the next few years, in the near future, is properly allocated, that a major correction is not going to totally throw our plan out the window? Now, is there a place for market risk? Absolutely there is, but it's sometimes a different bucket of money than from short-term income. And we don't get into specifics of that here, but it's really going down to, if you have the right strategy, the market ups and downs can actually be a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, you reminded me, well, we see a lot that comes in is people that have maybe legacy portfolios, something maybe they inherited, or just something that they had with a more sort of traditional stockbroker where they had that there over the years. And they come in and they have this portfolio that's full of single stocks, and they tend to be big U.S. stocks. So if you do that, you have just increased your risk almost exponentially. You have one asset class, large U.S. stocks, and then you have single stocks. So, you know, Enron was probably the big example of how something can go south very quickly. But I've got another one. My dad worked for Eastman Kodak for 31 years. And everybody thought, oh, that's a good company. It's a secure company. It's a Dow company. And, you know, Eastman Kodak exists in some form, but it's a shell of what it was. And that's exactly the kind of thing that just because you think something is a good company, you know, you're still way, way, way too risky if you're overloaded in single stocks and one asset class. So that's something I see over and over again, Bo, and I could not agree with you more.
And I think a key too, and this is some of the logic I'll hear, is because I have 100 companies, it means I'm diversified. And Kate, exactly what you're hitting on, if it's 100 large cap companies, you're not diversified at all.
Nope. It's old school. It's old school. And you know, you watch CNBC and you see Jim Cramer. And you know, I worked for Jim Cramer's website for many years. He was personally a great guy. I have no problem with Jim as a person, but you know, you see some of the people that call in and they ask if they're diversified, and it's the same thing. They've got five large cap U.S. stocks. No, people, that is not diversification. So, you know, you might want to get a better definition of that, but that just adds to risk. This is a topic I could talk about endlessly, but let's get through, let's move on to the rest of your list.
Let's keep looking. Yeah. And this is something, again, it's timely, this and why this made the list. It's actually understanding or offsetting interest rate risk. And I think what I've seen is a lot of people will think, hey, old school logic, so to speak, stocks are risky, bonds are safe. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're in an environment with low interest rates. Everybody recognizes we're in an environment of low interest rates. But what they don't realize is that that portfolio of just bonds, especially longer term bonds, could actually lose money as interest rates go up. And it's just, it's not that there's not a place for bonds in your portfolio. It's just to be aware and not be surprised if you had a statement and you're down 3 to 5%.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned this, because I think there's so much attention on the stock side because it's what you see on TV. It's what the media covers. It's what's going on in the equity markets. But fixed income is there to add ballast to a portfolio, to add some stability. So I could not agree more. These longer term bonds, nobody knows what the interest rates are going to be 20, 30 years down the road. And investors demand to be paid more to take on that risk. So yes, they're going to return more than a short-term bond, but it adds unnecessary risk. Take your risk on the stock side, not with these long-term bonds. So I'm completely on board with that one, Bo, as well as high yield bonds. I'm not a fan of those either for a different reason, but yeah.
Well, and again, it's just an awareness of how things work. Now you would work with somebody like either of us with strategy for these things, but I think it's important, Kate, that people have a basic understanding of how these work so they understand why we're recommending things we recommend or why we're doing what we're doing. That's a huge piece to the overall philosophy and message behind the Rich Life deal. It's great. I appreciate when somebody trusts me to help or give advice, but I feel like I've served them the best when they're better off. If something happened to me, they're better off meeting me than just blindly trusting me to tell them what to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's very important to understand what's going on, especially lately with the market volatility. You know, we did have quite a few questions from clients at the beginning saying, am I going to be okay? What's going to happen here? And then we just did a lot of client education. We spoke with people, sent out a lot of emails explaining the philosophy, and everybody gets it. Everybody gets it. We're not out there picking stocks for you. It's asset allocation, diversified portfolio. So that's another very key way to minimize the risk. And people are starting to understand that more and more. You know, grandpa's portfolio was that collection of large cap U.S. stocks, basically a closet Dow is what it really was. Mm-hmm. And those days are long, long gone. So, okay, this is great stuff. What's next?
Keep going. So yeah. this you might not hear talked about a lot in publications or just consumer information, but it's understanding sequence of returns or how sequence of returns works and where this comes up and why I like for the consumer to understand this piece, Kate, is sometimes I'm getting a logic of, hey, my 401k, it did 25% last year. It's a really good 401k, so I'm just going to keep it there, even though I'm retiring in 2 years. And sometimes understanding how the sequence of returns works, and what I mean by that is we can look at examples of if you have significant losses in the early years of retirement, especially when you're drawing down money, it can turn a 30-year plan into a 12-year plan really quick. Mm-hmm. And understanding that it's not just, you can't model it like some of this financial software does, to where it says, okay, a 6% average return, they're averaging at 6% every year. But that's not how the market works, right?
Yeah.
So you got to look, and sometimes when you realize the risk with sequence of returns, that can help move a client a little more conservative when that's the appropriate place to be for their situation.
Yeah, and that's sometimes, I agree with you. I talk to clients about that as well. And that's one that people, you're right, have not really heard of, but once you do start to explain it to them, they get it. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't want to have to dig myself out of a deep hole a year or two after retirement and then maybe have to go back to work, God forbid. Okay, what's next?
Keep one step ahead of the game. This is a little bit different. But what I mean by that is let's have a plan as if there's two plans I always see. There's plan one is if everything lays out the way we see it, mm-hmm. right? If we live this long, or healthy and things happen. And staying a step ahead of the game is make sure we have a contingency plan too. And that includes some of the risk reduction tools with the insurances we've talked about. That includes one of the bigger things I see about having a contingency plan, Kate, is more and more people are saying they're going to work longer. And they're pushing to max out Social Security or other things, or just shorten their retirement time horizon. And sometimes with that we don't control that we can work till 70 years old or 67 years old. Sometimes we get sick. Sometimes we get laid off. So I think having a contingency plan or making sure you have flexibility in your plan is one of the keys to having a successful strategy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I see a lot of people who, and this is interesting, and everybody can, you know, make of this what they will, but we see particularly a lot of people with government jobs who are like, I want out. And we see that a lot in New Mexico, because we get a lot of government workers in this state. And again, make of this what you will, but a lot of them just say, no, I can't take this anymore. And frankly, folks in the private sector are often a little more willing and able to hang in there a few more years. That's maybe a whole other topic that we don't necessarily want to go down that path today, but it's just an interesting observation that I have made over the years.
That is interesting, and it's across the board. I've just seen it's that scenario of we're dealing with humans and we're dealing with life, and it's not going to always. That actually, Kate, I've gotten to the point. The longer I do this, I say, here's our plan, and I can tell you it's not going to work out just like our plan, but it's our point that we'll drive from moving forward, and we'll adjust as we go. We built as much flexibility as we possibly could, because. We all know that life is just going to, there's some ebbs and flows and some unexpected things. There's some good things like inheritances. You might win the lottery. I don't know. But there's also some things that happen that could set us back if we don't have that. So I think you're right. I think it's just having a flexibility about your retirement strategy that's going to really be key to, one, it gives you some peace of mind because you're not so set up on things working out one specific way. And if they don't, oh no, I'm not prepared.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, things can turn out better than the plan indicated. We just had one experience that was great. And this is probably one that on some level, everybody kind of wishes could happen to them, but it's pretty rare. We had a client whose sister passed away in the fall. And he turned out to be one of the beneficiaries, and he got $300,000 to $400,000 from her estate. And that was pretty life-changing for him. Now, he and his wife already had assets with us, but he wanted to retire right away. He thought that he would probably have to work another 2 or 3 years. And that changed his situation, and he's able to retire this year now. So life happens, and it's full of surprises, isn't it?
That's right. That's one thing I can guarantee people on a plan.
Right.
There's surprises.
I can guarantee surprises. I like
that. So next, we got two more to get to, okay. Kate. This one is know where to get your cash. And what I mean by that is nothing's worse than someone coming in and you realizing that they were positioned in a way or maybe locked up in a way that they had no liquidity in their portfolio or they had no liquidity in their financial life. And we get into that situation to where either they're taking penalties and charges to take money or they're taking money potentially after a market drop, which is not a great thing to happen, they're just having to play that game we talked about earlier to where they're having to put things accumulate debt when the things in life happen outside of the budget that we all know happen. So important, crucial part of strategy is make sure, okay, typically we need an income plan, we need a growth plan, and we need a liquidity plan. And I've seen that liquidity plan, yeah, it sounds like a very basic thing, and it is, but that emergency fund we've heard about all our lives, or that we need a liquidity plan in our overall strategy, or it can cause problems, or again, just extra fees and expense that we could avoid if we made sure we had that piece set aside.
Yeah, it's interesting because this kind of comes back to the idea of knowing what your expenses are, how much you'll need. And one thing that I've seen a lot is particularly among new retirees, they're not really sure what their expenses are. and they often maybe end up withdrawing a little more that first year or so than they'd anticipated. And then you kind of, you get a handle on it and it settles down. So I know that like when you first do your plan, you probably have a window of maybe 6 months, a year, where you have to kind of figure out what's this going to be. But I think after that, you got to say, all right, I'll give myself some wiggle room to figure it out. But if I'm withdrawing too much, I've got to figure out where to rein in the expenses. That's a bigger problem than saying you should be spending more, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I'm glad you brought that up for listeners that to realize we can be as clear as possible during that planning phase. But one of the things I say, and it's the same thing you're saying, Kate, is that let's give this 6 months when we transition into retirement to really, really have a handle on what expenses really are going to be. And even how the income sources that you've turned on really sort out so we have a really good picture. And I think it's important that what you just brought up is that, okay, let's have a 3 month, a 6 month touch base to make any adjustments, be proactive, because we're really kind of going to be settling into this retirement thing, and it's just a necessary part of the process.
Yeah, it really is. We had one client who she was kind of calling us up ad hoc, asking for more money. And then we finally said to her, why don't we just, let's just put this on a monthly withdrawal. And ever since then, that's pretty much worked for her. She hasn't had to request too much extra money, but you know, it was just as simple as that, as saying, okay, we're going to add this to your monthly withdrawal rate. Let's see if that works. And it pretty much does. So again, it's just kind of figuring out what works for each person.
Yeah, and giving yourself permission to work through this process. You know, if it ends up that you need an extra $100 a month, $200 a month to be comfortable and not be stressed, okay, that's okay. Well, let's talk about that and let's see where that is. Do we need to cut back on something, or is that doable?
Right.
And if don't make it harder than it has to be on yourself.
And one thing that we routinely ask people to do is go track your expenses for 6 months.
Yep.
Just figure out what you're really spending, identify any leaks there. You know, one thing that I like to tell people about, because I'm guilty of this too, I have to do this. You go through and you're like, okay, is there some subscription I'm paying for that maybe something online or in the mail, whatever it is that I'm not really using, I'm not really reading, I don't do this anymore. You know, I just realized there's a gym membership that I had been paying for. And I'm like, I don't think I really want to do that one anymore. I want to go to another gym that's cheaper. I mean, there's things like this that it's constant tweaking. It's never entirely on autopilot, is it?
No, absolutely. It's a work in progress. And that's the flexibility we talked about from the beginning of the show, is that if we have that built in, really retirement's a game of making those. It's almost, I had somebody call into the Rich Life show years ago, and I thought it was the greatest call. And he said, you know what? It's like sailing. He said, when you're sailing in a sailboat, you're tacking, and all of it, you're constantly making hundreds of little course corrections, but you're heading in the right direction. And I thought that was a great analogy to think about what we're doing with retirement planning.
Oh, I love that. That is a good one. Okay, you got one more, huh?
Last one.
Right.
So, and this one's timely too. And it's just, you know, we talked about, we've got to deal with the reality of what the laws are, what the rules are, as they stand, as they are at any given time. And that's the last one, is stay current on policy change. And if you're working with a team, they should be helping you and be proactive and helping you with that. But it's also, at the end of the day, your responsibility to know, hey, this tax reform just happened.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of things that impact my retirement now. And just being on top of those things, or having a team that's helping you pull that information and work around that. But that's the big example I have right now, is really I've been going back to a lot of clients and just letting them know how this tax reform is going to affect them positively or negatively.
You know, that was one. And the other one that happened a couple years ago were the changes to Social Security.
Right, 2015, big changes that were kind of done overnight and swept under the rug. And then all of a sudden people realized, wow, it doesn't work the same way anymore.
Right, right. So it's true. Things like this can happen pretty quickly out of Washington. And you have to, that's where I think the benefit of working with a planner, working with an advisor who is up to speed, and we could say, hey, this is how this will affect you, rather than you just trying to guess and make the best of it.
You know, and I think that's another point when we're talking about, one of the questions I get is, how do I find a financial advisor? Find one that's proactively educating, providing information, and make sure they're current. Meaning, if you interviewed somebody and you asked them, what changed for me with this new tax reform, and you get a deer in the headlights look, maybe that's not who you want to be working with. Maybe they're not staying on top of things the way they should to best add value to you.
You know, there's another response that sometimes people get is, don't worry about it. I've heard clients have talked to some other advisors, and whatever the question is, they're like, oh, don't worry about it. That's not the right answer. I mean, if it's something that maybe does not affect you or won't have an impact on you, you deserve an explanation of why, not just don't worry about it.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me why. I want to know, because I talk a lot about personal responsibility when it comes to your retirement. Again, I'm big on having a team, but it's your responsibility to lead that team. And that's one of the things you really need to be proactive on. Have I built the right team to support me in the best way possible to reach those goals? Or, as I say, move me towards my definition of a rich life retirement.
Mm-hmm. Bo, this is great, great stuff. So let's start to wrap up here a little bit. First of all, how do folks get this book on the 12 steps that you have recently published?
Yeah, there's a couple things. The way to start, go to richlifechecklist.com. And what that'll take you to is the actual 12-step checklist. And it's just kind of a scorecard to identify any gaps you might have in your overall strategy. And from there, it'll lead you to where, if you would like to purchase the book that goes into detail, the 12 steps, you can do that. But richlifechecklist.com. And I'm excited to say, you can also check out the Retirement Resource Podcast. Now, why I'm excited about that, and I'm excited about talking about there, there's somebody you might have heard of. Her name's Kate Stalter, that's going to be a regular guest on the Retirement Resource, giving some wisdom and tips of the things she's run across and the things she's an expert in. So check out the podcast, the Retirement Resource, and the goal with that is 15, 20-minute quick hits of topical items that you want to know about, both financial and non-financial, in retirement. So very complimentary to the show that Kate does. And again, you'll see some familiar voices there.
Oh, that's great. Well, like we kind of started out saying, it's a whole lot of fun to be partnering with you on some of these projects, Bo. And you've given some information for the readers, the listeners, blog readers, everybody to find you there online. And thanks again. We'll put that up in the show notes for blog readers, for podcast listeners, and help folks get in touch with you and get the 12 steps to retirement success. All right. Thanks, Bo.
You know, I've really enjoyed the conversation today with Kate, and we're going to flip the script again on the next episode of the Retirement Resource, where I'll be interviewing Kate about the specific things women need to know in retirement. You don't want to miss that right here on the Retirement Resource.